Raya. Thank you. Hello, everyone. This is the TSC call. This is a public call. Everybody is welcome to join, listen in, contribute. There are two requirements, though. The first one is to live by the antitrust policy, the notice of which is currently displayed on the Zoom meeting if you're online. And it's good for everybody to be aware of it and live by it to stay out of trouble. The other condition is the requirement is to live by the code of conduct, which basically asks everybody to behave in a decent manner. So, with that being taken care of, we can get started. Are there any announcements anyone wants to make at this point? I don't have any on the agenda, so. Okay, if not, then we can move on to the quarterly reports. We got two reports. The first one is Caliper, the second one is Iroha. We're missing Indy, so if anybody is part of the Indy project, please think about it. So, Iroha, I just looked before the call. I didn't see any like questions that need to be addressed per se, but if there's anything either the team wants to, the Iroha team wants to bring up to our attention, or if there's any questions or comments from the TSC members, please. Now is the time to speak
Hi.
up.
Hi, my name is Sarah. I'm from Iroha team. You probably know me. I usually
Yes, of
send those.
course.
First of all, I wanted to say that we've did a little update on the report after we published it because, things change in a week. So yeah, we managed to resolve the issues with internships, so everything's on track now. Also, we added a little bit information on the HSMs, so the HSM modules. Oh, HSM models, that sounds weird. Okay, so yeah, we have some little bit more information about that one. So yeah, so everything that was as an issue in there, everything seems to be in order at the moment. And I think that one of our developers had a question about a CI. Whom can we contact about CI stuff? There's the architecture in there. There's a question if you go a little bit about
Yeah, a
this.
bit high up.
Yeah,
S.
there's like a CI for S 398X architecture. So I mean, when I was putting this report together, I had this question from one of the developers. Is it possible to resolve it somehow? Is it even possible? How can we do that and stuff like that? So yeah, that's our question, I think.
Yes, thank you. Rai?
Well, I see that they've already gone the route that I would have gone, which is to do the Linux One servers. You can jump on the CI/CD channel and chat, and let's talk about it, okay?
Okay, got it. Thank you.
So there is a solution, and you can get help.
Well, I'm not sure, but. It
You
says,
make it sound like there is. I was surprised, but okay.
well, it says, unfortunately, the results are satisfactory, right? So, yes, chat with me. Let's work on it.
Okay, so Rai is your man.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, I'll tell them to go to the chat and to contact you. Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah. Anybody else? Any questions?
Arno, this is Dave Huseby. I just wanted to point out that the Tavora security audit of Aroha has been wrapped up as of last week, and the report delivered. We're debriefing tomorrow, and there should be a follow-on blog post findings coming up soon.
Very good.
Yeah, also, one thing more. We've had some questions about Aroha 2 that we mentioned in this report, and if there are any like additional questions to the ones in the comments, We have a Roha2 developer here as well. His name is Nikita. So he'll be able to answer some of your questions if you have any, like specific questions, if just in case you have any. I mean, you can also contact us anytime if you have the questions, but you know, we have one of the developers right here. So just in case you have questions.
I think the question was from Tracy, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah, I think so. But I've sent her all the links to the documentation we have on this. And yeah, but if someone else has any other questions, I mean, that's kind of a big thing. So yeah, we want to be open about it and, you know, answer all the questions.
Absolutely. That's very good. Thank you. All right. Any more questions? Otherwise, we can move on to the next one. Kadipur.
Yeah, thank you for like allowing us to present. Thank you.
Sure, you're welcome. Thank you. So, any questions or anything the Kadipur team wants to bring up to our attention? There's nothing in the comments, but never know. Sometimes people haven't done it, but they still have something they want to ask. So, all right. If not, we can just leave it at this. Thank you. Let's move on. So we have two main agenda items. The first one is DCI Working Group report. So Dan, Adisa, Leila, I don't know who is going to lead this.
I will kick this off and then sort of hand around as we go here.
Very good.
As you guys probably recall, we started the DCI working group about a year ago. Some of us had been working for about a year before that on DCI related issues. And one of the main deliverables in the initial charter for the working group was to measure the community, figure out where we were weak in an objective way so that we could start to focus on those areas. And a couple of the main findings from running the survey were probably going to sound a little bit obvious, but it turns out people don't like doing surveys. And we heard this from another LF organization who encountered the same thing. So I think in the coming year, we probably want to revisit whether or not we try to do another survey. However, from the data that we did get from doing the surveys, there was nothing that would jump out and say, hey, we actually have some diversity where we wouldn't have guessed that we had it. If anything, I think from my assumptions, we were even less diverse than that. And we've got some of a few selected statistics I pasted into this page. But we also have Leila on from Accenture, who works with Elisa, and she has put more of that information into a visual form. And so Leila, I don't know if you want to share off of your screen or we can
sure.
have...
Sure, let me... Okay. It looks like... Okay, yeah, let's see.
And if I could just add, this is Elisa. So the survey that we did of the the Hyperledger community is aligning to interviews that we had done more broadly on this topic. And we've aligned that up to information that we already had on a broader level on what's happening within technology in general. So we wanted to be able to look at this from how do we compare to an overall technology element? How do we compare kind of in people's experiences and get kind of verbatims on how people are experiencing working within blockchain technology, and then dive in more specifically to what are we seeing within the Hyperledger community? So we had a basis of comparison.
Great. Can you all see my screen? Just want to make sure I'm not used to Zoom. Okay. And it's the PowerPoint or the findings, correct? Just want to make sure.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Great.
No, it's your
I have a monitor
shopping.
As well.
It's your Amazon shopping page.
we're used to using MS Teams with at Accenture, so I just want to make sure. Well, thank you, everyone. So I'm a manager with Accenture Research Practice and primarily dedicated to supporting our blockchain and multi-party systems practice. And as Dan mentioned, I work with Elisa Worley on a variety of our POVs and thought leadership, which includes some, you know, our inclusion and diversity efforts in this space. I'm also currently supporting some of our research with our talent organization practice as well, but pleasure to meet everyone virtually. I'll start off with a high-level summary and then go through some of the detailed slides for additional color before I transition to Dan for the recommendations, as I know that's where the meat of the conversation will be. But believe you all have referenced this document, but happy to answer any questions that we may not be able to get to at this time, either via chat or email. So the survey was deployed, as most of you guys know, earlier this year to sort of understand the state of DCI across the Hyperledger community, as well as, you know, obtain feedback on the points of collaboration and communication channels as well. So there were about 98 responses in total, of which 85% were made up of men, so that's about 83 total, and 13% women. More than half of the respondents were white and a third Asian, and about 9% were made up of sort of Black and Latinx Hispanic respondents. So overall, limited responses from underrepresented groups. So I'm not sure if that's too surprising, but majority of respondents, regardless of demographic profile, experienced civility and inclusion. However, diversity, particularly gender diversity, was not sort of always experienced by majority of respondents. Additionally, Hyperledger events and meetings were not always seen as inclusive or diverse, with the caveat that this sort of varies by demographic profile. And respondents cited that, you know, events were less diverse and inclusive, followed by meetings. Another key insight is that respondents appeared to be engaged, with majority contributing to code and communicating via chat and emails. However, there were challenges cited with, you know, finding the right agenda or meeting information or the right channel. And then I think no surprise here, but majority of the community members were concentrated across sort of three major time zone clusters. America's largely US representation at 42%, Europe 25%, and India 21%, which is likely one of the reasons why a majority of respondents cited difficulties with meeting times. So when asked, you know, if, you know, a respondent had experienced the following types of diversity, global diversity certainly led the way, followed by racial and gender diversity. Overall, gender diversity occurred about 41% of the time overall. But when you look at the woman respondents, they felt that it was represented 38% of the time. So not too much variation there. Racial or ethnic diversity occurred about 58% of the time, but for underrepresented groups, that being sort of Black and Latinx, this was experienced 33% of the time. And the slices of data you can find in the appendix to have the sort of cross-tab view. So certainly variation with a cross-tab view, but as I mentioned in the executive summary, the sample size of these groups are very small. And the majority of respondents were unsure about disability and LGBTQIA diversity. I mean, one contributing factor is that, you know, these diverse profiles can be hidden or not reported. Let me move to the next slide. So civility slightly exceeds inclusive experiences across Hyperledger. So overall, majority of respondents usually or always experienced civility, you know, 80% of the time, and inclusion 73% of the time, but certainly room for improvement. Women experienced it 77%, so comparable to the overall number with respect to civility, but inclusion is less than the overall number at 61%. From the woman respondent's perspective. So a 16% difference with the overall number. Other underrepresented groups such as Black and Latinx, Hispanics experience civility inclusion 70% of the time. Again, small sample size for those groups though. With the exception of events, the majority of respondents have been engaged across a variety of modalities with the community. Attendance and sponsored events, however, have been shy of about 50%, but this, you know, could potentially increase given the push for sort of virtual conferences or events or a hybrid of sorts going forward as a result of COVID. 63% of respondents agree or strongly agree that Hyperledger events are inclusive and diverse. 50% of women respondents and 44% of underrepresented groups agree or strongly agree. It's important to note that the percentage of those attending Hyperledger events is actually lower in this question than the previous, but it could be from observations of agendas or speaker report outs from events, or perhaps varying interpretations of what, you know, consists of a Hyperledger event.
Any comments so far?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Layla, you're presenting such good information. I just didn't want to overwhelm people. Yeah. Wait, have them wait till the end to weigh in on some of the things we're seeing. Sorry, was that you?
Would you prefer I wait?
No, please. Oh, sorry, Mark. I couldn't tell who was speaking.
Oh, that's okay. So when you refer to certain slices of the respondents as underrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because you feel people in that category did not respond enough, or just that statistically there weren't a lot of them, even though it could have been 100% of that community in Hyperledger?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just, in tech generally, those groups are underrepresented. So, and the fact that they were only a small slice of the survey respondents, it was just another way to sort of categorize that group. But just generally, the groups are seen as being sort of underrepresented in tech. And so, yeah.
Does that make sense? There's certain groups that, I mean, clearly we see as dominant in the space.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a large underrepresented demographic in women. And then it gets down to Latinx, for example. It's hard to actually even get data on some of those demographics. In individuals with disabilities, it's really hard to get, it's even hard to get statistics on how many, what percentage are we seeing even participating in technology in general, let alone in blockchain? So we've just defined that broader category as underrepresented demographics. Does that make sense?
Yes, I just wanted to make sure it was clear in my mind that we could have had 100% of the women respond, but we would still refer to it as underrepresented potentially because of the percentage in the community as a whole.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions?
Hi, this is Angelo. So I must admit, I really appreciate the effort of putting together all this data, but as you highlighted multiple times, the sample is so small that this doesn't have, to my understanding of statistics, doesn't have any significance. So are we sure that we are analyzing data that from which we can draw meaningful conclusions? Because I know I'm aware of the law of the big numbers, but I think there's no law of the small numbers.
Yeah, I mean, certainly this isn't statistically significant. We don't have the proper sample size. And I think that's why there's sort of analysis going on, is do we want to continue with surveys going forward? That being said, you know, it could bring some insights, or at least allow us to speculate what some of the challenges may be to kind of further investigate in other ways. But agree, it's not sort of statistically significant where we can say this is true for, you know, various demographic profiles.
But it does line up in general with the industry, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that was the point I was trying to make earlier. While this data is specific to what we saw in the Hyperledger sample, we've got a broader data set that we can align it to, both from a broader lens and interviews that we've conducted with folks that are from underrepresented demographics and beyond, as well as the data that we've been collecting historically, not only at Accenture, but clearly as an industry. There's a lot of available information that we've been collecting and research that we've been collecting just to get a better understanding of not only what's happening more broadly, but what's happening specifically within blockchain and what's happening most specifically in Hyperledger.
No, but sorry, but still, I mean, even if there can be just a fluctuation, can be just an error, the fact that it's aligned now, because the numbers are very small. I mean, just to inform everybody, that should be, in fairness, so we can even now say, though, this data is very aligned, but this is not, I mean, I would ask, what's the probability that this statement gets true? I mean, you will not be able to assess this probability because the sample is so small.
Well, I don't want to completely minimize the sample size. So yeah, we estimated that the total population is about 1,000 participants, and we got 100 respondents. So that can give you...
That 10% respondents is not insignificant.
Agreed. So what will be... So how far are we from significance?
I don't actually... But I'm not the researcher here, but in research that we've conducted historically, I don't think a 10% response rate is, clearly we'd love to have 100%, we'd love to have 50%, but we've got to start somewhere. So we had 10% respondents to give us a baseline and guidance on what are we seeing in diversity, civility, and inclusion within Hyperledger. And again, we're looking at this as a baseline for us to build upon.
Understood. So, that's understandable. It's a baseline in the construction, understandable. Maybe we can improve, we can get better and better.
It certainly, we wouldn't think that this is like, hey, we're done and we're going to stick a pin in it. The reality is what we're trying to do is initiate a conversation, bring some of these elements to life, let people debate it. You know, if people disagree or think that this perhaps isn't the way things are, then we can certainly discuss that. But I think it's really to directionally start a conversation to say, hey, this is what we found. We're going to continue to evaluate this over the course of the next year, do another survey, and perhaps now that people have seen the value of it and what we can do with it, we'll get a higher rate of participation, and we can just track how we do. This is something that we as an organization, and I mean Hyperledger, are committed to make sure that we are, you know, our goal, and certainly with the working group, and we're aligned. I think I would imagine that everybody on this call and the institutions that they represent are aligned to the mission to say we can do better and create a more diverse and inclusive and civil environment. This is just to provide a little bit of data to show, hey, this is where we're starting at. We know that we can improve upon that. So let's see how we do.
Well, the goal is very, very interesting. I really appreciate the effort. Can I ask just one more thing, just for my personal understanding here? What's the population? So who are these 1,000 people?
So that estimate is based on the contributor population that we sized for the last election.
Understood. Okay, thank you.
And just to your question earlier about probability or a significance there, generally the minimum is N per group, N equals 30 per group as the minimum. And obviously as you increase that, that improves sort of the robustness of the findings. But usually poll surveys such as this can still be helpful to provide an opportunity for people to provide feedback and get a sort of a pulse of the culture of a company or organization or open source community.
Understood. Thanks much for the clarifications. Mm-hmm.
So I believe, let's see. So as I mentioned, the exec summary, majority of respondents cited community meeting times as being difficult. And 45% found it difficult to actually find the agenda or meeting information, and 15% cited technical difficulties. So certainly room to perhaps consider simplifying the wiki UI or improve messaging and communications ahead of meetings. 38% of women respondents did not find meetings to be inclusive for new respondents, compared to 27% of the overall population. More than half of respondents cited that the asynchronous nature of Hyperledger chat allows them to participate. 87% of respondents did not find chat recipients to be rude or unwelcoming. About half did not have challenges finding the right channel, although 40% found it challenging usually or sometimes. So again, opportunity for improvement there with respect to sort of simplifying perhaps the UI. 80 1% indicated that questions were usually quickly answered, but this number is about only 46% when you kind of slice the usually or always viewpoint. So certainly room for new strategies to sort of encourage responsiveness of chats. I already kind of went through sort of the breakdown in my executive summary, but again, this is sort of what the visual of what I kind of mentioned. Obviously, a large chunk of respondents were also from the US. I've already talked about race, but majority of respondents were, you know, millennials or followed by the sort of the Gen X population as well. So there's some more of visuals there on the demographics. And then I will actually move into open responses in just given the time. So the last slide just provides a high-level summary of the open response question that was provided at the end of the survey. So there were about 37 open responses, which is 40% of the total responses, some more expressive than others, but just wanted to kind of bring some of those open responses to sort of the forefront here. So as meeting times were a major challenge, folks expressed the desire for more convenient times and requests for more asynchronous times at different time zones to sort of enhance inclusion and diversity globally. Some respondents felt welcome and included by the community, indicate that leadership does a good job to enable DCI, but there were other respondents who felt that there were issues with respect to sort of inclusion and civility, or not always feeling welcomed, or perhaps some issues with treatment with maintainers by hyperledger staff, such as feeling ignored, and the general perception that the community can be hard to break into. Again, these were just responses from the open response, so just wanted to bring these sort of colorful insights to the forefront. There was a desire for more resources and training. So training maintainers on expectations to sort of help uphold community accountability, as well as develop more central resources to, you know, support and help technical folks build solutions. And then lastly, some acknowledged the need to improve diversity and noted pipeline challenges, but recommended reaching out sort of underrepresented groups or organizations dedicated to diversity to learn about best practices for potential application to the Hyperledger community. So I'll pause right there because I do think it's a good time to transition to some of the thoughts about recommendations that both align to some of the findings, but also sort of other sentiments from the community.
Okay, should we switch back to Rise View for that?
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for doing the analysis on the data. I think it's helpful to see a lot of that graphically and get the summary of things. And those last points, when you look at the data, of course, with data, you don't get the free-form answers. So it was nice to be able to extract the free-form answers that people did provide. And so we've tried to incorporate some of that into the recommendations. One of the things we heard last week, last meeting from the folks at the DTC was the importance of having executive sponsorship and executive leadership. And since, you know, we don't hire people directly, this is just an open source organization where we sort of rely on companies that are sponsoring people to contribute here. One of the top level observations is that this activity kind of needs to go up to the board. We need the board's engagement, and we need their help to work with the contributing companies to make sure that they're contributing diverse resources into Hyperledger. And that for me is probably one of the biggest points here. But that, of course, doesn't necessarily absolve us in the TSC and in the maintainer community from continuing to take action before the board can engage in those ways. And so some of the things that we've called out for the TSC is to take a look at some of those freeform answers and what kind of things can we come up to help resolve some of those issues that were raised. And sort of the wordy first bullet point there goes to something that came from a discussion with one of the other LF projects where they found that they were getting better success by incorporating their DCI activity directly into sort of the main day-to-day there. And there's a risk that by having this DCI working group, we kind of shutter off the DCI work into a corner where it doesn't get the same kind of visibility, and so not as many people are engaged. So one thought was to bring DCI regularly into the TSC calls. So there's one example recommendation about how you could do that in there, but that's just sort of one way that you could go about doing that. There might be other ways that we can do it that wouldn't be quite as prescriptive as that. When it comes to maintainers, so if we think about analogs in between being in a company and being in an open source organization, for most of us that have been in corporate environments, you have regular annual training in different topics. So the analog for that with the open source community is probably very specifically the training that that was put together for Global Forum this year by Tracy and Swetha. And the benefit of that training isn't necessarily just exclusive to DCI, but the same things that you would do to encourage DCI are the same things that you would do to increase contributors in general and make sure that the people that come in feel valued. And so that's probably a good idea that all maintainers get familiar with those best practices, because that'll just help their project overall. There's also a training by the Linux Foundation on inclusive speakers, and there's probably other trainings that we could go out and find that would be applicable to open source. And I think rather than just sort of running through everything and making people listen to me ad nauseum here, I'll just point out one or two other quick things. One of the other takeaways from the presentation from the DTC was about having sponsors or coaches or other people to help guide somebody through the career path within a company. And again, that analog in the open source space is probably getting people into maintainer positions. And so having us as maintainers recognize the need to, when we see a regular contributor, take the initiative to you know, help coach them into the position where they can become maintainers. And then the last thing that I'll point out is there's inclusive terminology that the Linux kernel project has adopted, and that's a pretty easy thing that we can do in each of our projects to avoid wording that's not inclusive. And so I think I'll stop here and get reaction from everybody on what we've got listed here.
So, any other thoughts or ideas on what we might be able to do in the short term?
So is the goal to just make sure we're as inclusive as possible, and if we build it, they will come? Or is the goal to explicitly go out and try to get underrepresented communities more involved?
I would think it's all of the above. And Dan, sorry, I didn't mean to jump in, but to me, in instances like this, it's a multi-layered approach. We as individuals have responsibilities and accountability to how we act, behave, recruit, think about the structure and the aspiration of what we want this community to be. And then it goes all the way up to I think a lot of the things that Dan has been pointing out, that there's a more systematic element of how we as the Hyperledger organization and its member communities pursue that vision. So I guess my point is it can be anything and everything, and you know, just making sure that we're kind of aligned on what those steps might be. It, to me, the reason I keep talking about the individual is little things add up. So the more that we can do on that level to have impact, is a good thing, as well as kind of like these higher level programs that you know, are more formal.
Yeah, and I think that is a good question, Mark, and a slightly different take than what Lisa said. Or is, I feel like we've been doing a lot of if they build it, they will come, and I think that's going to have limited returns. And that's my goal with the governing board point, is that they're sort of our main source of talent, not necessarily the board, but the companies that are contributing people. And so if they're not contributing diversity, then it's really hard for us to get that in a grassroots sense, because that's, I don't think, where most of our developers come from.
So, but what are you proposing there, Dan? I mean, I get it. I mean, I think this is Gary. I mean, I think there's a couple of things. I think we tend to conflate what community means here, right? A majority of the community are people who use stuff. We've been struggling for 5 years, or however many years we've been doing this, to actually have, which is not uncommon in open source. So I don't blame anybody for that, right? Typically projects that are started by people, generally when companies start using it or people start using it, maybe a few stragglers out there will, you know, start and become contributors. But in general, for big, large projects that get used, you have way more users than you have contributors. So all the stuff Lisa said about communities, Rocket Chat, helping, totally makes sense. I get the fact that you're saying you want the governing board to recommend, try to help, have a discussion. By the way, most of the people on the governing board don't even have people that contribute. So I guess I'm just confused as to what the ask is there.
Yeah, so it is to for the board to work with the contributing companies, not necessarily just the premier companies that are represented on the board, but for them to take the leadership position with the companies that aren't contributing people, or maybe the companies that aren't contributing people, and get them more engaged.
I think, Gary, I think in that level, and certainly going to that last point, I'm sure IBM and others, you know, we do have massive initiatives on how we do outreach into communities on campus and beyond. And we've certainly done this already with Hyperledger. I know you guys have too, that, which is this idea that when we engage in hackathons or other things, kind of making sure that we're raising the profile of Hyperledger as well. I think in this instance, and this is certainly my own opinion, we're not necessarily just going after pipeline in universities for this technology, because I think it's going to grow so rapidly. We've got to be looking at a pipeline that goes into experienced professionals. In that respect, I think you're looking at people who have a certain type of skill sets that you're trying to bring to the table. That to me isn't necessarily something that is just pure targeted outreach. I think you really do have to get down on the community level and let people experience what we're talking about here. Let them see that the opportunity is rapid, massive, et cetera. And to me, that there is that is from a pure advocacy point of view, there's a little bit more grassroots there. So sorry, I threw out a lot of ideas in the same thought, but I do think that the element is we've got lots of member firms that are doing a lot of different things. We need to figure out how to align to those as effectively as we can. And I think as a community, and by that I mean the entire entity structure, how are we bringing Hyperledger into those conversations so that we're raising the profile, and how are that we then, you know, bleeding in these thought processes into Hyperledger only events and meetups? Did that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I think it makes sense. Look, I mean, everybody's hearing this all everywhere, right? And I think it's going to be a hard time, right? I mean, I just get into it when we talk about like Really, my comment comes around like contributors and whatever, because I think we have a much larger problem than a diversity problem with contributors. We have a problem that we don't actually get contributors at all, which again, I've researched tons of open source projects, and it's not unlike we're going to have a much greater community of users than we are of people who are actually going to contribute code, right? And most companies don't have the luxury of having people do huge amounts of open source, right? So it's just kind of an odd thing to say, you know, contributors, right? Because we contributed 25 people, right? You know, IBM, 25 people, maybe something like that, developing code on here, right? We have 350,000 people in the company. You know, there, yes, we have diversity initiatives, but it's not like it's going to trickle down and say, oh, we need to focus on HL, a Hyperledger as the one where we're going to do our, show our whatever, right? I guess that just seemed, I was just trying to figure out like
point. It's a really fair point. And I think I think what you've said needs to be factored into, to your point, we need to pull the lens out about just bringing people into the mix in general, and then, you know, looking beyond that scope. Because that was something that, you know, and again, I'm not a technical person, but I thought that was a fascinating stat, that currently it's roughly 5% of contributors are women, and how that impacts then their longer term prospects. So we just kind of had that statistic in mind of, okay, so we need to do better here. I agree with you, Gary. I think that there's a lot of complexity across the board here, that we're trying to unwind.
Yeah, I mean, this seems to be a bit of a challenge. Setting goals is fine, but we don't have as much control as you have within a company, where you have, you know, hiring processes and you can control that at a larger scale, as Gary was pointing out. I was going to say something about, you know, along the same line, as, you know, typically this is not managed at the micro level of a given project. So I don't know if it's really achievable to have goals that you expect to be able to reach.
But well, I think that's why that's targeted at the board, because the board has said that diversity and inclusion are very important to them. So here's the thing that we hand back to them. And for me, this is an optimistic thing. This is saying, all right, you've said that this is important. All right, here's how you fulfill it. We need, you know, more people. If each of these companies is going to say that this is an important goal, well, it's satisfied in a pretty direct way. So if you're not contributing people, well, here's your opportunity. Contribute people. You've got a diversity initiative in your company. Make this part of your diversity initiative in your company. But I think we have to avoid giving the board a free pass on this just because we know it's a hard problem.
And I think there's an adage that says you get what you measure. So there is benefit simply to having the conversation and putting the challenge forth. Whether we succeed or not, I guess is you know, to be determined. But I do think that there's a benefit to saying we're going to try.
All right, that makes sense.
So do people see like a TSE action could be that we change, well, we add criteria to a project going to some certain point that it has to have a certain diversity? Or are we not? Is that not something people would
do? I mean, we barely made the contributor requirement, right?
Right.
And, I mean, from diversity of number and diversity of even company, right?
So. Right. We do company, so if the company pulls out, but I mean.
I think the concern here is that it would end up acting as a filter step instead of increasing the pipeline. we really need things that increase the diversity of the inputs on the pipeline, not things that filter what ends up coming out at the end of the pipeline.
That's a really good point. I don't think anybody is looking for, this is supposed to be more inclusive, not excluding people by, you know, by setting a number criteria that would, so you're looking to get a certain percentage versus really, because that's, the goal isn't to keep people out. It's actually to just make sure that we're bringing more people in.
Okay, yeah, and I'm not proposing we do that. I'm just asking, trying to understand.
It was a good thought question.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, that would be something practical we could do, but I think there's challenges in that.
No, it's a question of, you know, the box. It would be a way to force projects to go out and make people and you know, the underrepresented things. But at the same point, it acts as a filter.
To Gary's point, we're not swimming in contributors right now. So I don't know that we could apply any forcing function there.
Yeah, and I think that's where I was kind of getting at, right? I was like, I mean, I get the fact that I'm making like statements of doing something, right? But maybe there's more that it's more like the community. That's why, the statistics were, the stuff was pretty interesting, right? And I always look at things also like as there's the proactive side. There's one, making sure that you're not doing anything that is perceived as not being inclusive or promoting this stuff, like that you literally have, whatever, I'm just going to, like, you clearly have racial, sexist, whatever bias, right? Or you're just mean, right? I mean, inclusion means a lot of things, right? I know we overuse the word, right? I mean, technically, inclusion just means that somebody should feel comfortable that they can participate in something, right? Regardless of whatever, right? So I think, you know, those types of stuff make sense. But then there's what can you do, you know, what can the organization do, right? I don't know. Is it, you know, how we recruit, you know, interns, right? Is it scholarships? Is it processing stuff? Is it actually, you know, not having huge, wine and dine events, right? And actually spending some of the funds that people contribute to this thing to do other things, right? Those seem like more things that the Hyperledger membership could control and do.
Yeah, and I think one of the great things is
sponsor somebody, right?
We don't have to necessarily figure those out ourselves. Part of this putting the impetus on the governing board is you set some goals, you figure out how to execute on those. We've already started down here at the grassroots level. We see limitations of what we can do, and we need you guys to pick that up at your level. Meanwhile, what we do at our level, our list captured in some of those maintainer recommendations and the TSC recommendations. So if you've got other thoughts, whether they're thought questions like what Mark had put out, you can go ahead and add those to the comments section down there. And maybe after a month, we can bring this topic back in for further discussion in the TSC. There's probably some other things that we should decide, whether we want to just recommend that the maintainers follow some of those recommendations or whether we require that maintainers follow those things. It's another thing to consider over the coming weeks here.
All right, sounds good. Thank you all for this, Leila, Anissa, Dan.
Yeah, good info for sure in the presentation. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's a starting point, so we'll see where we go from here. So thanks.
Yes.
Thanks for the discussion. It was really helpful, and looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Sounds good. So I would like to move on now to the next agenda item. It was not an accident that let this discussion go on. I don't think there is much to discuss yet for the last item. This has to do with the plans for the TSC election. I prompted the staff to, you know, on that email saying, hey, you guys are supposed to, you know, come with the plan, present it to the TSC and have the TSC approve it. And the timeline being that, you know, the election is sometimes in October. We need the plan to start being executed in September. So we basically have 1 month left to get the plan set and everybody agreeing to it. So I figured it would be good to get the discussion going. And so in response, Dave and Rai worked on putting together a plan that's on the wiki. And it has already raised some questions. Some of us have made some comments in the comment section on the bottom of the wiki page. And it's pretty clear that this is not quite right yet. So Dave, you're on?
I am, I'm here.
So what can you tell us about this? What's the status? I mean, how much is it appropriate for people to start tearing this apart?
Well, I think the first point to make is that I don't, no, never mind. We'll talk about that offline. So Rai and I have been discussing this ever since about May. We started early on this and been slowly making progress. Your email reminded us that we hadn't yet published it, although we'd brought it up several times in past TSC meetings. this is all largely, you know, the Q&A was largely lifted from the plan for the 2019-2020 election last fall. The eligibility criteria hasn't really changed much. The timeline was updated to reflect the TSC decisions that have been made this spring, such as moving the election into October to better dodge, you know, summer vacations and school years starting up and all that kind of stuff. you did point out that we are doing self and third party nominations this year, but through the TSC mailing list so that they can be confirmed before, so that nobody gets surprised, right? Like we had last year. We have already discussed there's a new tool that people can use, this this eligibility check site that I put together over the summer, where you can go and enter in an email address that you think you may have used for Hyperledger, and it'll tell you whether you show up in the list of eligible voters. That has not been updated with recent data yet. So if you use it right now, you may or may not show up, but that doesn't mean you cannot vote. You look at the timeline, the second half of August. Rai and I will be running the scripts to gather all of the eligible contributors and populating that site roughly on a daily basis. So it should be up pretty up to date by the time the 1st of September rolls around. So that's about it. I see that there was comments there. Tracy's comment about the Google form, not sure how that would be not inclusive. I would love to hear her comments on that. The Google form was what we used last year for nominations. I am going to propose that we have a standard email form since we're going to be doing nominations through the TSC. I can publish a standard nomination form here on the wiki that you can just copy and paste into an email and fill out the questions. That would be my proposed solution for that. That's it. Questions. Let's tear this apart because we want to get this right sooner rather than later.
Yes, that was basically my motivation for bringing it up and kind of prompting you guys. And I may have pushed you a little bit because I put that on the agenda. We didn't have really have time to sync on this, but...
We were prepared, Arno. It's no big deal.
So I think last cycle, we had an issue with people nominating others who did not actually want to be on the ticket. So I don't know if it's better to only make it self-nominations or if you need a process so that people who had been nominated by another can opt in.
So Dan, there was the TSC took up that question. Let's see, October 3rd of 2019. And the outcome, it's already been resolved. It's actually linked to from this page, but the outcome was that nominations shall be posted to the TSC mailing list and confirmed by the nominee in case of nomination by someone else. That's the official decision.
Great.
Yeah, so if it's not confirmed, it doesn't exist.
Exactly. And we're going to build that list from the official confirmed emails on the TSC list.
The problem about the Google Forms inclusivity was the Google products are not available
In Asia. Yeah.
Yes. So
that's basically anything that's Google is, it's like basically a third of our user base, of our participant base. So.
Right. So I have an interesting proposal. Since we're going to try to use, or if we go with my idea of having a standard form for an email sent to the TSC list, should we translate it into Mandarin and into Spanish and Portuguese and French? I mean, should it go out in many different languages so that people who aren't necessarily native English speakers can potentially nominate people?
Where our development collaboration language is English, I'm not sure how far to go there. I mean, it seems like a bit of a slippery slope because, you know, we're representing the technical community that's doing its work in English.
Right. Yeah, this is a question posed to you.
Yeah,
right? I think you're right.
I think it's a fair question, but I agree with Nathan. And in fact, I mean, the TSC conducts its business in English, and if people can't even get through the nomination process, I mean, they are kind of not, they're not going to be able to function, unfortunately. That's just the way it is.
Right. Okay.
All right. So we're out of time, but I wanted to bring that up to everybody's attention. I encourage people to follow up in the comment section, and let's iterate over this and try to make progress so that we can get that settled down pretty quickly.
So Arno, we're set as it is. We're set to enter the timeline on the 16th of August. That gives us exactly two more TSC calls.
Yeah, so I thought it would be a month, but you're right. So it's even faster than that. So I'm glad.
So let's argue in an email right now and then try to make some decisions next week and finalize the week after.
Yep. All right. With that being done, I think we can close the call on this just on time. Thank you all for joining. We'll talk again next week.